From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
It's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. We're pleased and honored to be joined by Steve and Bridget Patton, both of whom hold master's degrees in theology and counseling and serve as family life ministers here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Steve and Bridget, welcome.
Morning, Bob.
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing well, and I will hand the phone over to Bridget here in a moment. We're, of course, as you probably know, sheltering in place here, not coming into the studio. Yeah, is anybody coming into the studio these days, Bob?
Nope. We're keeping 6,000 feet between us. No, of all the places that probably shouldn't have more than one pit, this studio is very small, no windows, no ventilation, not a good place for at this point. I miss it. I miss the body language, the eye contact, the hand gestures, et cetera, and we all do, I guess. We all miss that personal interaction because you can be nodding when somebody's speaking. You can be shaking your head violently or disagreeing. You can be doing a lot of things when somebody's speaking, but over the phone, helps us, I think, with our communication skills with phone conversations. You tend to let the other people speak their piece and don't interrupt them. Sometimes face to face, you interrupt each other. So there's some graces in phone conversations too.
Yeah. Well, it's good to talk to you, Bob.
You too, Steve. So you're talking, and there was a wonderful piece in the current Catholic Herald about. Well, the opening says, calamities can bring out the best and worst in a marriage. Our routines can serve us well by keeping our lives predictable and peaceful, but they can also shield us from seeing and more fully embracing the whole of each other, warts and all. So try to view this disruption of our routines as an opportunity to grow in love. I think, you hit the nail on the head there. It's always important to communicate, but this is a especially difficult time, I think.
Well, Bob, we got to know that whenever anything bad or unpredictable happens in our lives, God is always in the mix somehow.
Yep.
Whether it's a flat tire, a car wreck, or a pandemic, so somehow God is there. He allows these things to happen. He wants us to pray our way through it, but he also wants us to take it as an opportunity to, look at ourselves and to look at our relationships and see how they can possibly be improved. And otherwise, we can just sort of plod on through life and maybe never make changes that we should be making. And I'll just detour slightly here. Many years ago, before I met Bridget, I was engaged to somebody else, and that engagement fell apart. And it was the absolute worst time of my life. I call it the train wreck of my life. But because of that, I was kind of forced to, look at myself in new and different ways, and I think came out a better person as a result of it. So anyway, that's the topic of our current Marriage Matters column in the Catholic Herald is, how do we take this as an opportunity, this whole shelter-in-place thing, as an opportunity to get to know ourselves better, to get to know our spouses better and our families better, and grow? Now, the situation that's presented in the column is we got one spouse. Well, as it says here, she says, I'm enjoying all this time together that we're sort of forced to spend time together. And he's saying, well, I actually need my personal space, so how does this couple figure their way through that? So, it's forced time together that neither one of them asked for, and how are they going to deal with that? So anyway, I think I'll hand the phone over now to Bridget, and she'll talk a little bit about it's an interesting dynamic between the two of us in that we're both, Bridget and I are both kind of solitary souls. I mean, we both were single for quite a number of years. I mean, we met and married in our late 30s. So that theme of solitude, and that we each need to be guardians of the other's solitude, that theme has been present in our marriage. And I'll just let Bridget explain a little more about what that means for her, and then how this this new pandemic reality has affected her. So let me hand it to Bridget here.
Hello, Bridget.
Hi, Bob.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. You know, what Steve just said about, she says, I'm enjoying all this time together, this together time, and he says, I need my personal space. The one good thing about that is that they were actually saying that to each other, because I think frequently I think we've all been in that situation where we were one of those people and didn't articulate that. And somebody's
exactly.
like, what's the matter with Bob? He's kind of grumpy. He's been grumpy ever since we got to this cabin in the woods, And it's like, well, I don't like cabins in the woods, but I guess I didn't tell anybody that because everybody was so excited about coming.
You're so right. I mean, it really is. Just being able to articulate that it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's important. And I know, this resonated with us because coronavirus hits and everyone comes back home. We're a family of five right now, well, four in our home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not that many, but each one was coming from a different place. Steve from work, Dominic from school, me, I'm for the most part here, but out and about taking care of things, and our other daughter, she's doing independent study. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, everyone's just rhythm is off. But it's interesting what you were just saying about how the fact that they even said that to one another. I was visiting with a friend over the phone the other day, and she was talking about her roommate situation. She's, a mom who's been a single mom out working on her own, and now she has a roommate. And she was saying it's very hard because her roommate wants to hang out together, and she wants her alone time, but they don't know how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And but for us, it took a while. I mean, we had to recognize that, so Steve's working from home. He needs a place. Dominic needs a place. And where am I going to find my space?
Uh-huh.
How do I find my time? And so we had to both talk about it and then be somewhat creative. Like who likes to have quiet time in the morning? Who doesn't? What do we do in the evening? Does one of us take a break? It's just figuring it out as we go along, but with one another and for the better of the other and for the family.
Yeah, and I think one of the hard parts, and we're Shelley and I are sheltering in place with four teenagers, so and it's different. I mean, there were when they all went off to school. There was lots of time to be alone. There's lots of times to go run errands or whatever it is you wanted to do, go for a jog or go to the library or go to the store, go to church, just a lot of things. Now it's almost like you need permission to go do something by yourself. I think I'm going to, go do the. Oh, can I come along? Well, yeah. You don't ever want to say no when a kid says to you, "Can I come along?" You never want to say no. But there are times when you just kind of want to go alone.
Right, and what we have found is that there does come a point when the kids actually do understand,
mm-hmm.
or if one of us says, I'm heading out, and they say, I want to go too.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if this happened with me. It may have, but my just saying, you know, I really do need some time to myself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Dominic loves to do the New York Times crossword with me online. We get online. And,
mm-hmm.
and so I just say, well, let's spend some time later, and we'll do a crossword or two together. But being able to say, oh, I kind of need some time right now, it feels selfish, but it's not. And like you're saying, with four teenagers in the home,
yeah.
with you and Shelley,
yeah.
that's a big deal because they've all got their lives.
Yes.
And so much of it is outside the home. So yeah. there's that frustration, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're seeing it, as, especially as the promise was this was all going to be over by summer, and it seemed like we were, you know, on that path, and even the epidemiologists were saying that it'll fade away in the summer to a degree, and boom, all of a sudden we're seeing this resurgence, and we had, had to have a serious talk with our kids last night. Not that they were doing anything that we didn't agree with, but just saying, we're sorry, but this thing's, you know, you can't be running around with your friends. You can't be, this thing's serious.
It changes so much. We have a daughter who is in college in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
She was going to be coming home this Thursday, tomorrow. And just the day before yesterday, she called and she said, I don't think I can come home.
Wow.
Because of the whole coronavirus and mm-hmm. now quarantine has been, you know, put on people coming back into New York.
Yeah, they won't let her back
California.
In.
California.
Yeah.
And so the families are dealing with a lot and some of it, I mean, you know, we feel very blessed, but some of it is just hard, and it's painful for parents when we see that our children have to bear it. I'm going to pass the phone to Steve because he's got a little bit to say about that with our daughter, Christina.
Very good. We're talking with Steve and Bridget Patton about, yep. you know, how to get along as families, as married couples in this pandemic, especially. Steve?
Yeah. You know, I was just going to say, Bob, that, you know, we as Bridget was saying, we, you know, to have that kind of protected space, it's not a selfish thing. You know, it can be if it's pushed to, you know, to its extreme. But, you know, we do need to protect that kind of inner space so that we can be more, you know, loving and patient with our families. And I, you know, for some part of the shelter in place, I did have to spend most of my time working at home. And it was, I started going a little stir crazy, and I would look for excuses to get out of the house, to go somewhere. And you know, Bridget was appreciative of that. And, you know, one of my favorite lines as I was leaving the house would be to say to, you know, my wife and my children, I would say, listen, you people are like family to me, but I got to get out of here.
Well, you know, the hard part too for me is when one of the kids says, like, I'm going somewhere, kind of come with you, and I usually say yes and am pleased for that, but once in a while, you know, like you just want to, maybe you're in a hurry or you just want to be alone. You don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want them to think that this is because of you that I need to be alone. I just need to be alone. I'm a loner.
Yeah, right. So, but you know, Bob, it's just a time to, you know, and that this was actually not in the current Marriage Matters column, but we wrote another column where, just as the pandemic was coming out, and you know, people were just feeling, you know, and having to shelter in place and make all these radical adjustments to their lives, that it was a time to just to remember to give thanks. You know, we say this in the Sunday liturgy. Every liturgy, we say, Lord, it is right to give you thanks and praise. You know, we do well always and everywhere to give you thanks, O God. And that means in all the circumstances of our lives that there's some, you know, reason to give thanks. And as Bridget was just saying about our daughter, Christina, who's now, you know, essentially trapped in New York. I mean, she could come home for a vacation, But, you know, going back would be a real hassle on that, on the New York end, because she would have to go into quarantine. So, but I just, again, I'm just sitting here at home now looking at a picture of our dear daughter, Christina, thinking, God, I mean, it helps me appreciate her even more that now that we can't have her home, I yearn for her company even more. So, it makes me want to be a better dad to her, because I can't see her in person.
Yeah, it's the other problem with it is, how do you get home? Do you want to get on an airplane? Do you want to get on a bus? Do you want to get on a train? We're all having to make seemingly very compromised decisions about things right now.
Yeah, it's just the new reality of family life and tragically, it's a new adjustment to parish life too. I mean, these are our faith communities. That it's just a different reality now. That we just. So used to that comfort and solace that we get from our faith gatherings, that is just sort of not obliterated, but it's just it's really compromised in a big way. But we've God, what are you saying? How is God in the mix here? What is God telling us about what's really most important?
Well, we talk with our kids every day about God's in charge, number one, which leads to all kinds of questions. So why is he allowing this, or why is he causing this, or the millions of questions that spring from that. But God's in charge, and not just that he's aware of this pandemic, but he's really working on other things. He's in the middle of it. He's got our back. He's got our front. He's got everything. Individually, he has our back, not just as a group, not just as a country or a world, but individually, he knows what's going on in our hearts and in our souls and in our minds.
Yeah. I heard an analogy once of, we live, as we journey through this life, it's like we are living on the back of a tapestry that is continuously being woven. And, if you ever look on the back of a tapestry, it's just a kind of a jumble of threads going here and there, and it often doesn't really make much sense. But if you walk around to the other side of the tapestry, that's when you see, the artistry that's really being put together.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it in many respects, it won't be until we're on the other side of death, when we arrive in, our Father's, heavenly kingdom, that we will then see the sense of all this. We will see, how God was working out his great plan, even through the pandemic, even through car wrecks, even through broken engagements, that somehow God is, masterfully weaving it all together. So it's hard to, remember that in the midst of the trials of the moment, but our faith does tell us that we have a God who loves us and is looking out for us, and that the Scripture says that all things will work together eventually for the good.
I've said many times that the best, looking back, the best things that ever happened to me in life generally are things that I was kicking and screaming trying to avoid at the time. And looking back, I go, boy, I'm glad that happened to me.
Yeah. Not just. I guess this would be what my mom used to call words of cold comfort.
Did we have the same mom?
So we accept that in faith, even if we don't feel it. As a lived emotion.
Indeed.
But anyway, Bob, it's a time for making adjustments, and it's like we said in the article, I'm going to give it. Bridget's whisper something to me, so I'm going to have her get right on us here.
Bridget, you don't even have to whisper now.
I'm mouthing. It's a time for giving. In other words, it really is just a time when we can see how we can give to one another. And we're giving to, you know, people who are very vulnerable. And just by, you know, staying home. So that's what we try to remember. And as Steve said earlier, to be grateful.
Yeah, and, you know, we've noticed with, you know, four kids doing distance learning, and one of them a freshman in college, but at home doing distance learning, that some of them thrived with it, some of them struggled with it, and some of them never got out of their pajamas. You know,
yeah. But
it
yeah.
was really different, and of course, it was terrible for mom and dad. It was like, I don't know how to Zoom. Don't talk to me.
Oh, my goodness, I get it. And I was very grateful for the teachers.
Yeah,
Oh, my gosh, they're superstars. So it was good for me to be able to say, this boy's got teachers. Mm-hmm. My daughter, she was used to it. She'd been doing independent study, but they helped me out tremendously. But it is amazing what you're saying about how we are able to connect in so many ways that back in 1918, we couldn't. I mean,
right.
We've got Zoom, we've got phone, we've got internet, we've got all sorts of ways if we're creative.
Yeah, and to learn what's happening all over the country and go, okay, they did this there, and this is what's happening. You know, to learn from
so much information.
Yeah, there's tremendous information. And unfortunately, with this pandemic, it seems like not the rules we have to follow are changing every day, but the rules that we thought controlled viruses are changing every day. This one seems
right.
to be very unusual.
It does. It does. And I, you know, I was thinking about it, how grateful I am that, I mean, just for my faith. And
yep.
I mean, that sounds, I mean, it's just, I do draw on that. It gives me peace, you know, just to come back and say, okay, this is crazy. Who would have thought in 2020 that we're dealing with this?
Yeah.
But we know that, you know, as we say, God is in charge.
You know, the somebody pointed out to me a reading from Jeremiah where God says, when you call me and come and pray to me, I will listen to you. When you look for me, you will find me. It's a
yeah.
promise. You know,
promise.
I read those right. words this morning and I almost cried. It was like, wow, you will find me. I will hear you. I will listen to you. It's not idle words, pray and see what happens. No, you pray with a sincere heart. I'm listening and I will answer you.
It's a fact.
It's a fact.
And it's just so, I mean, yeah, that brings tears to my eyes. It's just so reassuring. Our God is good and wants us.
Yeah. And it also says, for I know well the plans I have in mind for you. Plans for your welfare and not your woe, so to give you a future of hope.
Yeah.
So, boy.
Absolutely.
If we can pass that on to our kids and share that with our spouses, we're all going to be better off.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's very, very true. And I think that's what's been true for us and for, I hear it from so many people. I mean, so many people are saying we are spending good time together too. You know, some are saying we're praying more together. We're having our meals together. We're finding that just there's a great peace in our families or whatever our units are as we're together. And in that, I mean, I just keep thinking, yes, and Jesus always says, you know, when you come together and I'm there with you. Come together and pray, I'm with you. And I give thanks for that presence.
Yeah, we're finding the same thing. We're having more meals together in a week than we probably normally had in a year. You know?
And our kitchens are a mess. But
our kitchens are a mess. The cupboards are frequently bare. You know, it's like, well, okay, what are we going to do now? Well, let's eat, you know.
Yes, we're going through lots of snack foods.
Oh, boy. It is. I mean, it's you hear that term comfort food, and it's never been more real than right now, you know.
But it's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's I may be shut in, but by golly, I can eat that donut, and I'm going to feel pretty good.
You're right.
So,
oh boy.
Yeah. Some people talk about the COVID-19 jokingly like they gained 19 pounds. You know, so I'm one of them. So, Bridget and Steve, it is so good to talk with you. And
Great talking with you, Bob. Thanks so much.
Wonderful stuff here in the Catholic Herald and the three great steps of advice: accept, adjust, and pray. And you can read all about it in the current Catholic Herald. I look forward to reading more of your columns.
Well, thank you, Bob. It was good talking to you. And I'm really missing you in person. You know,
I'm missing
articulations of like how you would hold your hand behind your neck and say, you're dying here, Steve. You're dying on air. I'm joking, Bob.
Give you the fake hook. Like
the hook. Yeah, I love the hook. No. Hey, listen, everybody out there, Bob Dunning would never do that to you. He's the most gentle interviewer out there. So I've actually coached people before, Bob. We're about to go on your show. They're, all nervous about going on the Bob Dunning show. I said, listen, Bob, he's as easy as they get, so no worries. It's always good talking to you.
Oh, Bob. You're very kind. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Bridget. And great to talk with you. I hope we can do this again soon.
I hope so, Bob. Take care.
God bless. That's Steve and Bridget Patton and the column, Marriage Matters. How do we keep the stress and anxiety of this time from straining our marriage in the current copy, current edition, the July-August edition of the Catholic Herald? We'll take a break. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hello, this is Mark Ross from the Diocese of Sacramento Black Catholic Ministry. This is the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks for all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento with the Black Catholic Ministry and so many other things. There will be a parent workshop July 14th to the 16th, presented by the Diocese of Sacramento Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry. Probably help you talk to your children about the sin of racism. July 14th to the 16th, featuring Laura Lynn Solano, Assistant Director for Lay Formation. You can contact Jennifer Campbell about this. Jennifer is at jcampbell@scd.org, or give her a call at 916-733-0135. There will be a live stream on YouTube. Also go to scd.org, which is the Sacramento Catholic Diocese, scd.org/parent support. So much happening. Virtual Camp Pandola is coming up this summer, just around the corner now. July 12th to the 17th is session one, Fun in the Sun. Session two, July 19 to 24, is Christmas in July. Session three, July 26th to the 31st, Mission Possible. And session four, August 2nd to the 7th, Weird Science, which is one of their most popular ones indeed. Each week-long session for campers is for 6 days, and it's for campers 6 to 17 years old. There will be interactive and self-directed activities three different times during the day. There's a morning session, an afternoon session, and an evening session. Cost is just $100 per camper, and you can register at Pandola, that's P-E-N-D-O-L-A, pandola.org, or give Jen Campbell a shout at jcampbell@scd.org or 916-733-0135. A reminder, too, loaves and fishes, they always need water. They need bottled water. They obviously, this time of year, there's a tremendous need for bottled water, and you can drop it off at their headquarters at 1351 North C Street, right here in Sacramento. 1351 North C in Sacramento. So if you get some bottled water, and they'd be much appreciated. 1351 North C Street. This is a statement from Bishop Soto, released this week on the tearing down of the St. Junipero Serra statue in Capitol Park. Has also happened in San Francisco, also happened in the Los Angeles area, and being debated in other municipalities throughout California. On Saturday evening, these are the words of Bishop Soto. On Saturday evening, the statue of St. Junipero Serra was defaced and torn down from its place in Capitol Park. The group's actions may have been meant to draw attention to the sorrowful, angry memories over California's past, but this act of vandalism does little to build the future. There's no question that California's indigenous people endured great suffering during the colonial period and then later faced the horror of government-sanctioned genocide under the nascent state of California. This legacy is heartbreaking. Yet it is also true that while Father Serra worked under this colonial system, he denounced its evils and worked to protect the dignity of Native peoples. His Holiness as a missionary should not be measured by his own failures to stop the exploitation or even his own personal faults. Holiness, in the end, is more a result of God's grace and our willingness to cooperate with his mercy. Understanding the efforts of Father Serra to bring light into the bitter, bleak darkness of colonial ambition is the difficult task of history. So is the present, arduous work to chart the future with hope. The strenuous labor of overcoming the plague of racism should not be toppled by nocturnal looting. Dialogue should not abdicate to vandalism, nor should these unnerving episodes distract us from the duties of justice and charity upon which a better California can be built. We are reminded, and you spoke on about the 4th of July weekend, that this was when it happened. On this 4th of July weekend, we are reminded that our common cause is to be a living monument to those words carved into the American soul. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. All monuments are imperfect, as are our efforts to live up to America's founding ideals. The primary task is to build up our community, not tear it down. Bishop Soto also refers to a longer letter from Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles, and I'll share some of that with you as well. This is a letter to the faithful for the memorial of St. Junipero Serra. You should be reminded he was canonized in 2015. Pope Francis came to the United States, his first visit as Pope, and visited Washington, D.C., where the canonization mass took place. Also visited New York City and Philadelphia on this trip. Did not come to California. There was some hope he would come to California. Father Serra, St. Serra, is buried at Mission Carmel, right here in California. And, of course, he was canonized for his work in California, where ultimately there were 21 missions, nine of which were founded personally by Father Serra, in St. Serra now. This is a letter from Archbishop Jose Gomez. Addresses the recent controversy surrounding public monuments to St. Junipero Serra, and asked the faithful of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles to invoke the saint's intercession for this nation that he helped to found. Ahead of the saint's July 1 feast day, he urges prayers, especially for an end to racial prejudice and new awareness of what it means that all men and women are created equal as children of God. And Archbishop Gomez also offered an original spiritual meditation, a very beautiful one that he composed almost entirely from words drawn from St. Junipero's sermons and letters. And this was written prior to the tearing down of the statue in Capitol Park here in Sacramento, but after statues were removed in San Francisco and in Los Angeles. Archbishop Gomez begins, "My dear brothers and sisters in Christ, recently statues of the Apostle of California, St. Junipero Serra, were torn down in San Francisco and in the plaza outside our first church, Nuestra Señora Reina de Los Angeles, in downtown Los Angeles. Up and down the state, there is growing debate about removing St. Junipero's memorials from public lands. Ventura officials have announced that they will hold a public hearing to debate whether to take down his statue in front of Ventura City Hall, Ventura a little bit north of Los Angeles. And you're going to find that there are memorials to Father Serra all over California. And the Archbishop's point in a lot of this is to say what they're doing in Ventura is the right way to go about this, rather than have individuals or groups decide on their own that this should come down. No debate, no discussion, no anything. Just we've decided this has to go, and we're going to pull the statue down. Let's have a public dialogue about it. Let's actually convene the city council, the parks department, the church, indigenous people, etc., all quote unquote stakeholders, and we're all stakeholders. Every one of us who's a citizen of California or a citizen of this country is a stakeholder of some kind in this. Let's all sit down and talk about this and have the appropriate body make a decision. And the Archbishop said that the folks in Ventura may well decide that they want to take the statue down, or they may well decide to leave it, but that they are the proper ones to be deciding that. And I think that's very interesting. He says, he writes, our society may reach a consensus not to honor St. Junipero or various other figures from our past, but elected officials cannot abdicate their responsibilities by turning these decisions over to small groups of protesters, allowing them to vandalize public monuments. This is not how a great democracy should function. Those are words that I think are very good and very reasonable and proper. Let's have the discussion. And if it's decided by after, you know, really hearing all voices and really listening and really maybe doing more research, that we come to these conclusions. Okay, we've decided this is not a person we want to honor, whether it's Father Sarah or someone else. That's fine if that's what the decision is. But let's do it in a proper and reasonable manner after all voices have been heard. Archbishop Gomez goes on to say, I understand the deep pain being expressed by some native peoples in California. But I also believe, right, Junipero is a saint for our times. And he goes on to cite a number of works about him. He, the champion of human rights, this country's first Hispanic saint. He said, I was privileged to celebrate his canonization mass with Pope Francis in 2015. I rely on his intercession in my ministry, and I'm inspired by his desire to bring God's tender mercy to every person. The exploitation of America's first peoples, the destruction of their ancient civilizations, is a historic tragedy. Crimes committed against their ancestors continue to shape the lives and futures of native peoples today. Generations have passed, and our country still has not done enough to make things right. In the family of God here in the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, we have worked hard to atone for past errors and wrongs and to find the path forward together. We honor the contributions that Native peoples made to building the church in Southern California, and we cherish their gifts in the mission of the church today. Over the years, I have come to understand how the image of Father Sarah and the missions evokes painful memories for some people. For that reason, I believe the protests over our history in California and the broader protests that have started elsewhere in the country over historical monuments are important. Historical memory is the soul of every nation. What we remember about our past and how we remember it defines our national identity. The kind of people we want to be, the values and principles we want to live by. Those are the words of Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles, Archbishop Jose Gomez, and you can find the complete text of that on our diocesan website in Bishop Soto's statement. There's a link there to it at scd.org, Sacramento Catholic Diocese.org. We're now going to play for you a audio of Bishop Soto talking to Ned DeLessie, former director, executive director of the California Catholic Conference, about religious freedom.
Greetings. This is Bishop Jaime Soto. We are a few days actually before July 4th, when as Americans we celebrate the Declaration of Independence and the great experiment that is our country. In part of that experiment is the whole relationship of religious freedom and how people of faith engage the public square. That very core issue, which was important when the United States was formed, continues to be very important today. And I want to just share a few thoughts and reflections about that. And I'm also just delighted to have with us Ned DeLessie, with whom I have worked closely at the California Catholic Conference. And also we've worked on many issues regarding religious freedom. one of the things I wanted to point out and then ask Ned to comment is that oftentimes what we think of when we think of the more popular notion of religious freedom is that we tend to see it as a personal thing, that you know, my ability to be able to express my faith or and to act on my faith. But we oftentimes forget that that religious freedom also includes not just ourselves as individuals, but also our institutions, and that our you know, particularly for us as a Catholic Church in the United States, our schools, our hospitals, our social services, and many of the things that we do that engage the community have a very religious character to them. And in the world that we live in today, that religious character, that public religious character, both as individuals as well as institutions, is being challenged. And it's important for us as Catholics to be very attuned to that and sensitive to that. And Ned, why don't you share a few thoughts on that?
Sure. Thank you, Bishop. It's good to be with you and good to have this conversation right before the 4th of July. I like where you were going with that. You know, I think for as Catholics, we have our personal faith and we express that in our relationship with the Lord, and we're engaged in a lot of different, you know, things in the world. But we also, as you point out, you know, we are a very public church. We are the body of Christ in the world. And, you know, we, and in our American experience, we have expressed that by doing precisely what you say. We are the largest private provider of education, social services, and, you know, healthcare in the United States. And we do these because we are the healing presence of Jesus, the teaching presence of Jesus, because we are the charitable presence of Jesus in people's lives. And that's why we do it. And so how we engage in that is very important. And it's a good time right now on the 4th of July to reflect as faithful Catholic citizens about how do we participate and what is this moment inviting us to? And, you know, in our very polarized political experience, in our very challenging, you know, COVID reality right now, and surrounded by various decisions that the Supreme Court is engaged in, all of which involve religious liberty, it becomes a wake-up call from the Spirit for us to say, what are we supposed to do here? We're entering into an election cycle again, and how are we going to respond?
You know, one of the things that, you know, we're waiting right now for a Supreme Court decision to come down having to do with what they call the ministerial exemption.
Exemption, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be very, you know, important decision, because it goes to, again, our ability in our Catholic schools to be able to hire teachers who are willing to be of one mind with regards to Catholic teaching, and not only in terms of their own, not only in terms of what they say, but also how they live.
True, and you know, we had discussed when we worked hand in hand together at the Catholic Conference about Hosanna Tabor, which was a 2012 decision, 9-0 by the Supreme Court, granting this ministerial exemption to private schools, private religious schools, and we have been living in that reality ever since. The court is now reviewing that particular decision, you know, in light of the Fair Employment Act, and using two unfortunate optics on the case. But the reality is that the court is going to need to decide: do they allow that broad exemption, which, you know, which we have, you know, a right to, in my opinion, the fact that it's our schools, we run them for religious purposes, and, you know, we're publicly out there. People do not have to choose to come to our schools, they don't have to choose to teach at our schools, you know, but when they do, we have a right to say this is the conditions and the reality within which we operate. And, you know, how far does that extend? Does it extend all the way down to a janitor? Or does it extend to any person who's publicly in the classroom with students and teachers, and with students? And so that's what the court's going to decide. And it's, you know, it's going to be a very interesting decision. The court is very divided, 5-4, the justices seem to be going different ways on different decisions right now.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that is, you know, more you know, to the heart of this is that, you know, I think obviously we know that there are religion teachers who teach religion, but in our Catholic schools, I mean, even if you're a science teacher or you're a history teacher or you're a literature teacher, you know, that we believe that religion and faith permeates all these different areas, and the beauty mm-hmm. about a Catholic school is that we can really enrich our whole curriculum with the faith perspective, and help mm-hmm. us as disciples of the Lord Jesus, you know, understand the Spirit's work in science and in literature and in history, and so you know, that somehow to all of a sudden say that only, you know, let's say religion teachers are the, you know, have the religious exemption, have the ministerial exemption, and not other teachers, that could be a problem. But we'll see what the court decides on that.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I think you know, that would be given the nature of our Catholic schools, and our ministries are all different, but in our Catholic schools, they're catechetical experiences. Their formational yes. experiences, and we have yes. an expectation that the people who work and you know, participate within that ministry of the church are willing to acknowledge the church's teachings and to, you know, to do that. Now, we accept a burden of forming those people and informing them and working yes. with them and supporting them, but we're living in a culture that's pushing back very, very dramatically, as we saw on the, you know, on the whole question of LGBTQ ruling by the Supreme Court. The culture is pushing back and saying, you know, you have to respect people and do that. So, you know, I'm not totally optimistic the court's going to affirm everything we want on this. I think the court may come back and say, you have to define what is ministerial. And that will be an interesting question for the church. I'm not in favor of doing that. I'm just saying that given the cultural dynamics there, it's going to be an interesting moment evolving for us as a church.
But I think in a certain sense, it's important for people to understand how key is this religious liberty issue, and how that does, you know, mm-hmm. and in the environment that we're in today, you know, we're having to play defense in terms of protecting what are essential religious liberties and the mm-hmm. essential religious character of our institutions. But let me just change the
Very
topic
much so.
To, you know, let me just change the topic to the public schools for a second, there also that. And what many parents don't always understand when their children are attending public schools is that they, as parents, that particularly with regards to sexual education that goes on in public schools, that Catholic parents can choose to opt out, to have their children not listen to or partake in the state's sexual education curriculum, which oftentimes is in conflict with with Catholic teaching, which teaches quite frankly a more sensible and a more human approach to our sexuality that helps us mm-hmm. to appreciate sexuality as a gift from God, but that's not what's taught in public schools, and parents can exercise that option. Oftentimes they don't, mm-hmm. and we've been recently trying to educate parents about that.
Yes, very much so. And you know, and I, you know, we, it might be a bridge too far, but I like to remind folks that the public schools operate legally in loco parentis, in the place of the parents, and so there's supposed to be a dialogue and a conversation and a respect that goes on between the public sector who organize and run this and the parents who participate in it. And I think your approach is correct. I think it's an opportunity for us to educate parents and say, you know, you don't have to be, you know, a bad actor. You just have to be a responsible parent, and you have to participate and recognize that the public sector is not necessarily going to share your faith perspective on something, as you say, you know, sexuality and education. They're not going to share that. And so you have to be assertive in terms of what you're doing with your children, but you also have to be assertive and involved as a parent in the public sector. And you know, that is governed by some state law, but primarily by what happens in local school boards. And, you know, we have to participate, we have to be there, we have to invite, we have to say no. We need to discuss the opt-out, we need to discuss the opt-in, we need to discuss as parents with you as the school board what we are doing and how we're doing it. And so it's a challenging time for parents, but you're right on.
Yeah, well, I, you know, again, the, this is just those are just a couple of areas where religious liberty is important to us as Catholics, both in our institutions as well as our families. Mm-hmm. And I want to encourage people to learn more about religious mm-hmm. liberty. And please go to our website and see what the information regarding religious liberty. Regarding the opt-out programs from public schools, and all the other information that's available to you on the Diocesan website. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much, Ned, for being part of the conversation.
Oh, my privilege, Bishop, and God bless, and happy 4th of July.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Well, here I am in a river of questions. Can I pour my heart out to a listening ear? Well, I see this life, it's valleys and mountains,
And I think of all the roads that brought me here. Oh, that brought me here. Walking down the road. Well, I've questioned my reasons, this life I'm living. I questioned my ability to judge wrong from right. Well, I questioned all the things I've ever called certain. My race, my religion, my country, my mind. But the one thing I don't question is you. You really love me like you say you do. You really love me like you say you do. So hold me, I need you to hold me. Well, I've questioned significance, meaning, and relevance. Does the work I'm doing really matter?